Item number six.
Okay.
So this is the tab that has the vote on it.
Cash overlay.
I have to find better ways of referencing these materials.
Is that supposed to be up in Seattle somewhere?
Not necessarily, but it doesn't look like it's too far away wherever they took the picture.
Carol on the bridge there, he's looking.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be familiar with
that. He's got the Sea Hack banner going, right?
That's a Puget Sound flag.
The 12th man flag.
The 12th man flag.
We asked. It's not Washington.
It's not Washington?
Our pictures are not.
It isn't?
It's either that or Omaha. I always get those two mixed up.
Probably got that off that online Microsoft pool of pictures.
That could be. So similarly with the cash overlay, we have several slides that are a refresher from the January meeting. And the idea with cash overlay is that we have cash sitting in the account. Cash overlay managers provide us with a convenient, low-cost way of getting exposure like the rest of our portfolio without buying and investing in those strategies. In other words, we're not buying the hard securities. We're getting the exposure through futures. And the futures contracts allow us to get very similar, not identical, but similar exposure with our cash. And because futures, we only have to put down a margin amount to get an equal, a larger exposure. We therefore have the cash available to us for the management of the plan overall while we're getting this exposure. There are three primary purposes outlined on pages 8, 9, and 10 of why we would do this. And page 8 is the first one. It's what I just described, cash equitization. We have some portion of the portfolio held in cash. Through the use of futures, we can get stock and bond exposure, somewhat replicate the rest of the portfolio. This is not going to give us exposure to things like private equity, private debt, real estate. It will give us certain sectors of the fixed income market, not all. It does not give us exposure to hedge funds or risk parity or any of those kinds of things. It's more of the stock and bond portion of the portfolio. But it is effective and it helps eliminate the cash drag, the common term we use when performance is lower than we'd expect because we have cash earning essentially zero in today's market. Page 9 highlights passive rebalancing. The idea here is that when we want to rebalance the plan, we can use these same capabilities to get our portfolio to look like the new portfolio without having to actually make the trades. And so passive rebalancing can be an effective tool to get us to where we want to be sooner than us actually going through and selecting individual managers, going through a transition process and what have you. We can artificially replicate that exposure. So passive rebalancing could be interesting to us in the future. And the third way we show on page 10 is duration matching. We don't foresee that being a real use for the plan, but it is a capability that the overlay providers offer. Pages 12 and 13 introduce the overlay providers themselves. Parametric and Russell are the two of the leaders that we use regularly in this business. Parametric is a specialist in this, and we've had great experience using them. And so they're probably a little bit ahead of Russell, partially because Russell has what we think could be more influential here in the change of ownership. Aside from that, they're both strong.
Have they been
providers.
Used by other 37 Act counties?
Parametric?
Yes.
Yes. And very favorable results with them. Very responsive, good client service model, all of those good things.
How many counties? Two, three?
Probably five or six that we consult to.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
So Ed, before you get further into the individual company discussions, describe, if you can, the embedded risk inherent in the futures play issue. I mean, I think just to some degree we sort of know what it is, but I want to be sure I understand the idea that if you're going to play in this arena to mimic the portfolio without actually having to invest, so you're literally buying futures. what's the real risk to us?
So futures in and of themselves have the investment risk of being a levered product. So when I say that we put down a marginal amount to get a notional amount of exposure, if we wanted to get $100,000 worth of fixed income exposure, we'd have to put down $2,000 or something like that. So that creates inherent leverage because we take $2,000 from our cash account and put it there to get this larger amount. If that larger notional exposure then moves dramatically against us, we'll get a capital call and they'll say we have to pony up more than $2,000. Our margin requirement changes on a daily basis. And so if that dramatically moved against us, we would have to pay it and perhaps then settle out of the contract if we wanted to dissolve the position rather than wait for it to recover. If we wanted to get out of it, we'd have to pay and settle that. So that's the risk. It's the leverage.
So the risk is that we could wind up spending the cash we were trying to preserve to pay the margin call, essentially.
Right.
What would amount to a margin call?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So we would, in the example of $2,000 and $100,000, we wouldn't be paying $100,000. The idea is that we'd pay the $2,000 to get the exposure. The $100,000 declines due to market conditions. That ate away our margin requirement. We have to now pay in more. We may decide to say, let's get out of this and settle out. And then the futures contract, we wouldn't have to buy the remaining $80,000 or whatever. It would be the settlement of the margin account to back out of it. So it's really about the management of the margin account is key. And so what providers like this typically do is they over commit to it, recognizing that we don't want to be troubled with daily mark-to-market calls. So commit too much, and that provides a buffer. And then if anything happens in the market, okay, fine, we can get out of it easily enough.
Yeah, when you say commit too much, say we want $100,000 of exposure, they commit $110,000?
No,
or
so
they, if the margin, it goes the reverse.
Well, if the margin requirement is $2,000, they might commit six. Or
okay.
Something like that.
Okay, so they're going to. Okay, so
overcommit the margin.
We're prepaying potential margin. Okay.
Yeah.
That was going to be my question, whether we were going to have to set up a cash account to meet these margin calls on a daily basis.
Kind of true up on a real time basis.
Exactly, yeah. So that kind of somewhat defeats the purpose of this. If you have to keep cash on hand to meet
those. Well, we can keep cash on hand.
Well, I understand that, but yeah. For other purposes, yeah.
All we're talking about is making that cash on hand look more like the rest
right.
of the portfolio.
Right.
While still maintaining it in liquid form.
But the cash on hand is now invested either in margin or in the futures itself. We don't have cash sitting in Rusty's bank or vault anymore. That cash is invested.
And what they're looking to do is take that, if we said it's a 1% cash mm-hmm. position in the plan, they're trying to get the corresponding exposure to the rest of the plan with that 1%. They're not trying to give us 150% leverage on our entire plan. They're saying, you have 1% cash drag. Let's get rid of that 1% okay. cash drag, and that's it. So what's the notional exposure we need to get for 1% of the portfolio?
Would you contrast for me, I'm familiar with traditional stock options. Okay, you buy a stock option, in our example, $2,000 buys you 6 months of $100,000 worth of stock to purchase it, we'll call it today's price. If it goes up, you won. If it goes down, you lost some or all. If it goes down more than the 2%, you lost all of it. But there's nothing more than the cost of the option that's at risk. Mm-hmm. We're talking about something different, and I'm just asking if you contrast that. The futures options apparently risk you continue to have as it goes down. That's not traditional in my experience on stock options. That you don't have any risk except the price of the option.
Yeah, so this is actually like buying the stock in a way because you're buying a futures contract, which means that you're agreeing to pay a price in the future for it. So they use the futures price, which is however far out your contract goes, which is similar to a put or a call option. And it has the spot price, which is what is being traded at today. So the spot price on the S&P 500 would be whatever it is, 2030 or whatever we're at today. So you enter into it at 2030 and you have to pay the margin amount. Now the stock market goes up and down over the life of that futures contract where you're agreeing to buy it at that futures price. And so you have, it behaves similarly because to an option because you're only putting down the marginal amount to get the notional exposure, which is similar to a call option where you're paying the call option value to get the exposure to the stock price. So there is that similarity. But the contract is for the life of that future. It actually behaves very similarly. Your end-up payoff diagram is a similar kind of result that, depending on what the closing price of the future is on that date, determines whether you made or lost money. And similarly, the mark-to-market every day along there determines where you are.
It sounds to me like, you know, the example I just used, obviously, arbitrarily, $2,000 buys you 6 months of exposure on $100,000 worth of stock at today's spot price. Okay, we use that as part of our model. If it drops to 80% of today's spot price, you lose $2,000. If it goes to 120% of today's spot price, you make 20% less the $2,000 that you paid for the option. So the risk is solely the option price. I'm hearing you say that the risk is more than the option price dealing with futures contracts.
It is the value of the index that you're buying. Yeah,
that's a much bigger risk, I would think.
Well, it's a time thing. If you buy a call option, you're basically saying, I'm buying the right to buy at this price for a period of time. With the futures contract, you're basically committing that I will buy $100,000 of stock, and I'm just putting down $2,000 now. You still have that obligation to buy it. You buy the option, the call option, all you're doing is buying the option. That's all you're obligated to pay. What we could lose if we committed to buy $100,000 of futures contracts is the $100,000 if that futures contract went to zero and we didn't walk away, we didn't get out of it in before that. Okay. So the value of the $100,000 may reduce over time if the market declines and the time value starts eating away at that value, then the margin that we would have to put up would increase more until they would essentially meet at where it would essentially zero out.
It's a great explanation.
So it's with the futures, you're making the commitment to buy. With the call option, you're just buying the right to maybe buy in the future if you decide to. But the time value, you're right, the value of this thing are pretty comparable because you've got time, you've got the term of the contract eating away at the premium, and then you also have the market fluctuations eating away. So the value is going to be the same, but the dollar commitment is, you have to look at differently. Mm-hmm. Or what you're committing to at the time that you make the purchase.
Well, you have to look at fixed.
Pardon?
Yeah, the commitment clearly on the future side is not fixed. Because
no, the commitment on the future side is fixed because you're committing at the time to buy $100,000 to invest, to pay $100,000 for this basket of stock futures.
It could be worth $80,000.
Exactly.
Could be worth $120,000.
Or it could be worth $120,000.
You know, we're talking about risks that are sounding kind of exogenous and a little bit out there. Just to understand, in a simplistic form, we're taking a basket of cash, and instead of taking that basket of cash and buying some bonds and some stocks that fit our overall asset mix, we're buying synthetic versions. We're buying futures or forwards on those. So you're not adopting a risk that you have not already agreed to in your asset allocation. You're simply taking the cash and making it look like the rest of the portfolio on a lower transaction cost basis. And I think it's important to level set how much of the portfolio would be exposed to this. We have a 1% cash target position, so $70 million. And the only other thing we're really contemplating doing with this initially, it would be securitizing the employer prepayments when they come in. that's about $300 million. So kind of at the high point, we might have $370 million of cash that is exposed to the overall asset mix of the portfolio. So you see, how low could it go? How low could the stock market go? Could it go to zero? Yes. Is that likely? No.
Tim, isn't there a difference, though, that this piece would be leveraged, whereas our portfolio that is attempting to replicate is not leveraged?
This part would be leveraged technically. What I would envision here is we wouldn't actually take more notional exposure than the cash position itself. So if there's $70 million of cash, we will put $70 million of notional exposure. We don't have to commit all $70 million of the cash to that, but it would be fully backed by a cash balance. So on the individual implementation, there would be leverage there. On a programmatic basis, no leverage, because if we have $70 million of exposure, we have $70 million of cash.
What you just said that makes it all clear now to me anyway is that really what we're doing is duplicating what we would have done.
Yes.
Had we gone down our traditional path of using the 70 or the 300 to buy a portfolio of stocks and bonds, okay, instead we are setting up a phantom account, but effectively it has the same risk. Now that I've got that.
It really is that ability to move money around without incurring physical transaction costs that make this more cost effective. It's much cheaper to transact in the futures and forwards markets than to pay the bid-ask spread on individual securities and the actual explicit commission cost. So if where this really becomes a bigger issue for us is when we get the employer prepayment, we take a look at that, we deploy that into our underlying funds, and then 3 weeks later, we're pulling money from somewhere from benefit payments. So we're incurring transaction costs to invest that money, and we're incurring transaction costs whenever we pull some money back out. Now, part of that is addressed under the FFP model with the liquidity portfolio intended to provide that.
Right.
But this provides an additional tool of when that cash comes in, we have the option of saying, do we want to physically deploy this, or do we think that this money might be more transactional in nature, and we want to expose it to the long-term game plan, to long-term risk exposures, to long-term asset allocation, but synthetically, so that if we need to unwind something, we can do it at a much lower cost. You're not getting anything additionally beyond what you said you want in the asset allocation. You're simply doing it on a more cost-effective basis.
The additional risk that's added by this is that if we buy a stock, we can hold it as long as we want, and it goes up and down. The additional risk that's imposed by this is we're buying these futures, but only for a fixed period of time.
Right.
And so
the cash needs are such that.
But beyond that, the cost savings and the flexibility and everything, I think, far outweighs that.
So
that time
issue.
And
typically, the break-even point, if you intend to hold the stock or bond position more than 6 months, you absolutely buy the physical.
Yeah.
If you intend to hold it for fewer than 6 months, this tends to be a more cost-effective route.
It seems to me that one of the, not only identifying opportunities, of course, is key, but even stronger than that is monitoring this. And I don't sense, since not criticism of the internal staff, but you have the bandwidth to be monitoring that day to day. So it's up to Parametric and or Russell to basically sit there and say, we're watching this for you. This is not a set and forget strategy. This is a set and watch it every day strategy.
And that's why it needs to be on that outsource. Yeah, you're correct. We don't have the trading capabilities internally, nor the bandwidth, nor do I want to build out the trading capabilities or bandwidth for this, because it's available via external parties at a competitive price with better compliance than we can possibly build out internally. And this becomes an external money manager engagement that then becomes monitored via the bank and via Verus.
But these guys have got to be agile enough to be able to contact us and say, this is moving one way or another. You need to make a decision point today, this afternoon, tomorrow.
Set up the decision structure in advance in the investment policies.
Right.
So it would be, we want this exposure. Is there a stop loss provision? Is there a point we want to get out? What triggers notification?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Harvey and then Raleigh.
Oh, I think it's good for the board to keep in mind that the system is in a negative cash flow on an annual basis. But from time to time, obviously, as Tim says, when the employer contribution comes in at once, you need to do something on a cost-effective basis for a short period of time, rather than put that money into our securities
at a transaction cost, and then later, because we're in negative cash flow, have to draw back out
of at a cost.
So this is a way of evening out that cash flow issue when we get that big bump on July of the employer contribution.
Okay. Rob? Ed or Tim, futures roll over on a quarterly basis. So what sort of time frame would you be putting on this that we've gone, let's say, two rollovers? When would we actually be going into the physical? And what happens if that's a bad time to do that?
Typically, it's applied on an ongoing basis so that the overlay provider manages the rolling of the futures contracts as part of their mandate. And so when we're talking about using it for cash equitization, the guideline would be that they are to achieve a nominal exposure commensurate with what our cash level is. So, you know, depending on the 7370 kind of numbers, they'll be monitoring that and seeking to get that notional amount on an ongoing basis, and they'll handle the rolling thereafter.
I think, Raleigh, the second part of your question is, would we park money here and leave it for years? No.
Right.
It's, again, the internal heuristic would be this six-month window.
Well, it would look like it, though,
yeah.
Because this is the money that's flowing into and out of the plan. So when you turn it on and have them doing what they're doing, it would look like they're continuously managing 1% of the portfolio, but that's with intent, because that 1% is what we're using for the inflows and outflows. So,
Ed, are the Russell people the same for portfolio management and the cash overlay, or are they a different set of individuals?
Oh, transition management?
Mm-hmm.
Different crew.
Different group.
Yep.
So it's not as if you don't have too many eggs in the one basket, in the Russell basket, you know, but so it's a different basket.
It's still a consideration. Yeah. I always think it is when you have one organization representing.
Too.
So,
okay.
Just so the Russell transition management is just one time for this time, but this cash overlay would be a longer term, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
transitions are discrete events.
That's right.
Yeah,
that happened.
Just to answer Jerry Holcomb's question a little bit, is as far as the reporting from the overlay managers, there's a ton of reporting. We will always know what's going on with our cash, with the margin account, I mean, all of it. And I have a lot of experience with one of the managers that is on the list today.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's not intended to be a criticism at all, but sometimes you can get overwhelmed with data.
Mm-hmm.
When you say there's a lot of information, that can almost be numbing if you don't know which things to focus on, which part of that dashboard to watch.
Not a lot. It's more of small amounts of data consistently provided.
Okay.
So over a long period of time, it looks like a lot of data, but on a day-to-day basis, it's not.
There are key metrics.
Overwhelming. It's very manageable.
This was really helpful, this discussion, because I had a lot of questions in reading this stuff. I didn't quite appreciate this risk, so I thought the questions and answers were great. And Brian, your explanation of the future versus call option was very helpful to me. Appreciate
it. If you ever have questions about derivatives, Brian is always
very derivative. Yes. Yeah.
So you don't like the Warren Buffett description of derivatives?
What's his?
Well, I think they're self-destruct mechanisms.
So can we also go to Brian for discussions on credit default swaps?
Yes, absolutely. Would you like to buy one? I have one right here.
It's a little late in the game, but
so Ed, this is like arguing before the Supreme Court. You never get through whatever you're asking.
Right.
That's how this works.
Sorry, his yellow light's on now.
Now, do you have? Let me let you finish on six before we go to seven.
I think we're heading down the right track. I think the recommendation that we're making is that, again, you authorize Verus to conduct a formal search, likely on these two, and come back to you next month with the results of that search. The other thing I wanted to highlight, though, is what we're talking about is the cash equitization. And I think it's really interesting the capabilities that cash overlay managers provide, because part of what we're talking about with FFP is the optionality of what FFP gives us. And if there is a market correction, a 2008 kind of correction or something, and we wanted to be buyers in that environment, how would we do it? This provides us a different avenue for thinking about that. So first, I want to be clear that we are not contemplating that today. We are simply contemplating the cash equitization. And we want to get to know it and use it and gain comfort with it. But down the road, there are other uses for it that can be good for the portfolio, and we should be attentive to that. So if and when that time and whatever situation comes up, we'll come back to you with our thoughts on that.
Okay. We are at item 7. Do we have a...